The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. Please like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View Radio network. All right, we're through the first week, the main wave of free agency, headed full steam ahead toward the NFL draft, and here to help me sort of assess where the New York Giants are, what they've done, what they haven't done so far this offseason, is Patricia Traina, good friend from Locked On Giants and Giants Country. Patty, thank you very, very much for hopping on. It's been a little while.
Yeah. What, about 5 minutes in between our shows? Well, but no, it's good to be here.
There is that, since we just finished recording a show for you, but you know, it's been a while since we've done any shows together.
Yes, that's true. And you know, it's good to be with you as always.
I thought maybe you were avoiding me.
No, never.
we've been doing these together for too long, Patty.
Yeah. Too we're regular long. Laurel and Hardy. Light.
Oh my God. Yeah, something like that. Although I'm not sure anybody finds us actually that funny, but
yeah, probably not. We're legends in our own minds, which is good.
nothing wrong with that. You know, somebody's got it. Somebody's gotta think we're good.
Yeah.
so anyway, Patty, let's talk New York Giants. And I want to start here. I want to start with an opinion that I shared in a column that I wrote at Big Blue View recently. I looked at what Joe Shane has done so far this offseason. And when I look at it, this is year three for Joe Shane as Giants GM. Believe it or not, it's already year three. It seems like the guy just got here, but it's already his third offseason. And for me, Joe spent the first 2 years kind of shoveling out from under what he was left with, shoveling out from under the cap mess that he was left with, you know, and it really took him 2 years to get fully out from under that, really sort of figuring out which pieces of the roster he wanted to go forward with, which pieces of the roster to keep and build with. And we saw him give long-term contracts to Andrew Thomas, Dexter Lawrence, you know, those kinds of guys. But when I look at what's been done now, I look at this situation and I think this is now Joe Shane's build. It's Joe Shane's vision. It's Joe Shane's philosophy in cap management and roster building. It's not complete, but I think we finally are seeing in year three for Joe, I think we're finally seeing Joe begin to really put together what he wanted, the way he would really like to build this team.
Yeah. I mean, look, Joe Shane came in first year. They had all kinds of success that wasn't really expected. He admitted that maybe that success might have accelerated certain things. And then, of course, everything came crashing down. Then you throw in the injuries and all the problems that they had last year. So this in year three, you're right. Joe Shane is taking a more realistic approach to rebuilding this roster, or retooling, I should say. Rebuild probably isn't the right word. Renovating is probably the right word, because they do have some guys that are in place as the foundation. But, you know, you look at what Joe Shane has done, and where have the Giants consistently been beaten, especially in the division, in the trenches, right? So where were the priorities? The priorities were on the offensive line. They were on the defensive front seven, you know, with the trade acquisition of Brian Burns. Still some work to be done, but Joe Shane has shifted the philosophy. And instead of building from the outside in, which is how the Giants were kind of doing it years ago, and you and I talked about this, you know, many times, about building from the outside in and how that wasn't really the right way to go for a team that wasn't a consistent playoff contender. Shane is now building from the inside out, and he has shifted the focus as to, you know, what's more important monetary wise. And, you know, that's offensive line. That's, you know, obviously pass rusher, which was a problem. And here's the other good thing about what Shane has done. By going the veteran route, now those units hopefully will be able to hit the ground running. You won't have to sit there and say, oh my God, we've got four young offensive linemen. Let's hope that, you know, at least half of them develop. You've got guys that are relatively proven who can come in and be functional for you and do a decent enough job. So I think that played into the factor as well.
Since you sort of went to the offensive line, let's talk about the offensive line a little bit. And you and I have talked in the past a lot about last year and some of the decisions that were made and how we felt like they really didn't make sense. And one of the things that bothered me immensely last year wasn't just the backups that were kept along the offensive line. It was the fact that the Giants didn't settle on a starting offensive line until after the preseason, until after the 53-man roster was set, and until they had begun practicing for the Dallas Cowboys in week one. And I mean, it got to the point of ridiculousness with guys taking one rep and then, you know, moving to a different position. And, you know, somebody else would come in at left guard. And I mean, it was to the point of how does anybody get anything out of this and do anything consistently and really build any chemistry? I would love to see the Giants settle this offensive line as quickly as possible. John Runyon can play both sides, left, right. Jermaine Illuminor can play right tackle. He can play one of the guard spots. But so much depends on what they decide to do with Evan Neal. I just want the Giants to settle this offensive line. If they're going to play Neal at guard, get him there by minicamp and settle this offensive line and figure out who's going to play where. I love the flexibility of the Illuminor and Runyon signings. Just your thoughts on what they've done with the offensive line and how you ultimately think that it shakes out.
Yeah, I've had a couple of Raiders beat reporters on my show. Hondo Carpenter, who writes for Raiders Today over on the Fan Nation Network, and Quentin Myers, who is the host of the Locked On Raiders podcast. And both of them told me the same thing about new offensive line coach Carmen Brasillo. And that is, Brasillo has a philosophy. If you are not a top five at your position, all right, think Andrew Thomas, who I think we can all agree is a top five player at his position. You better be prepared to have position flexibility. You better be prepared to be cross-trained at other spots. Evan Neal, I think we can all agree, is not a top five at his position. So that being said, I would not be stunned if come, you know, the phase two of the offseason program, when the coaches are allowed to work with the players, I would not be surprised if Carmen Brasillo says to Evan Neal, okay, you know what? We're going to let you compete at right tackle, but we want to cross-train you over at, say, for example, left guard, which, you know, if you remember in Alabama, Evan Neal played at the left on the left side and was fairly good at that on that side. So I would not be surprised if that is in the plans for Evan Neal. And I think it makes sense. Look, you can't just hand jobs to guys. You know, that's been it's gotten better in recent years, but it's still something that I think they need to continue looking to do. Unless you are a top player at your position, you should have competition. You know, coaches always talk about, oh, there's competition across the board. Well, we all know that that's not true. We know that Bobby Okereke isn't going to have competition. We know Andrew Thomas isn't going to have competition. Why? Because they're tops at their positions. So I think, you know, with the offensive line, Carmen Brasillo is going to have that competition. He's going to be able to get a look. And then, you know, hopefully by the time OTAs are done, have a rough idea as to, okay, this is what I'm thinking for offensive line one. This is what I'm thinking for offensive line two. And then, as you said, get it settled, because you cannot run up to the last, you know, the first week of the regular season and still not know what you're doing. That was a problem that I had as well with the approach last year. And they ended up putting, you know, square pegs into round holes, and that line was a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I believe Joe Shane when he says that he still thinks that Evan Neal can be a right tackle. But, and I believe, as you said, that they will give him an opportunity. And the complicating factor in all of this is Evan Neal's ankle surgery. We don't know if he's going to be able to be on the field in OTAs in phase two. We don't know how quickly he's going to be able to get out there and take snaps. Maybe he'll be ready to get out there. Maybe he won't. But Jermaine Illuminor has been a better right tackle than Evan Neal for the last 2 years. So I don't think it would shock anyone if Carmen Brasillo, if Brian Daboll, if they look at their options. I don't think it would shock anyone if they think the better way to go is to put Illuminor out at right tackle. If that's his better position. You didn't overpay him, but you just paid him to come in and help your offensive line. If that's the position where he can help your team the most, then that's where you play him. Like you said, I think they'll give Neal a chance. But
yeah, and you know, it's fair. You know, I know mm-hmm. I know fans are down on Evan Neal. He's had some injuries that, you know, which you got to take into consideration. But that's why they signed Jermaine Illuminor. That's why they signed, you know, John Runyon Jr., the position flexibility. So now they're not locked in and say, you know, to say, oh my God, you know, Illuminor can only play right guard, for example. No, he can play both guards if need be, plus right tackle. I think he can play left tackle too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So you have flexibility, and you want that flexibility because, God forbid, you have injuries. You want to know that you have a capable body of, you know, that you can plug in at the spot where you have an injury.
Right. And last year, you know, we've talked about that structure of the roster of the offensive line last year. And last year, when things went wrong, the Giants wound up with a backup guard playing left tackle. They wound up with a right guard in Mark Lewinsky, sometimes playing left guard. They wound up with, you know, with a left guard in Justin Pugh for a while playing left tackle. They wound up with a lot of guys where they didn't belong because their initial structure wasn't right. And they wound up chasing it all year long. And this year, I don't think that's going to be the case. It certainly doesn't look that way. Patty, let's talk about what they haven't done in free agency. For you, what's the biggest thing that you think they have to address at this point?
Well, I think on the offensive side of the ball, get a number one receiver. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. The receivers that they have right now, Darius Slayton, Wandale Robinson, Jalin Hyatt, you figure those are going to be, you know, three guys that are going to see a lot of balls. They're not a bad unit by themselves, but just imagine what a number one receiver might do for those guys. How many more opportunities that might, you know, open up for them. You know, get a guy who can be, who can win the contested catches. You know, Rome Odunze is a guy that I like over at Washington. I wouldn't mind at all if the Giants took him at six. So, you know, definitely wide receiver one, because look, Darren Waller, they brought Darren Waller in and he was supposed to be that pseudo number one receiver. Well, we all know what happened with Darren Waller. And now who knows if they're even going to have Darren Waller this year. And even if they have him this year, I would think this would be the last year he would play for them, given the way the contract is structured. So on the offensive side of the ball, definitely receiver. You can tell, you know, I mean, they might as well put a billboard ad up in Times Square that they're going to draft one, because I think they will. And then on the defensive side of the ball, who is CB2, cornerback two? Right now, I don't think they have that guy. You know, by default, you know, is it Trey Hawkins, who they tried to, you know, plug into that position last year, only to have to take a step back with him? Is it Nick McCloud, who happens to be their best special teams player, who I doubt they want to lose on special teams? You know, I think they would, you know, if they had their druthers, they would prefer to maybe play McCloud on a spot basis rather than on a full-time basis. So wide receiver one, cornerback two, to me, are the two pressing needs that this team has to address either, you know, in the back end of free agency or in the draft.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Patty, let's talk about quarterback. And let me start here. We talked a little bit about wide receiver. You mentioned the need for wide receiver one. If it's you at number six, you've got your choice. Say it's J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, who's the quarterback in the Big Four most likely to be there. Or it's one of those wide receivers, Malik Nabers of LSU or Rome Odunze. What name's on your card?
Oh, you put me on the spot here, right?
Of course I am.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. I'm going to go wide receiver. I know it's a deep wide receiver class, but you know those top three guys, Odunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., those guys are special. They are legitimate number one guys. And here's why I say I would go receiver as opposed to maybe J.J. McCarthy. Regardless of who the Giants draft at quarterback, assuming that they do indeed draft a quarterback, that kid's going to sit. Okay? Now, there's nothing wrong with that. The kid's sitting for a year. We saw it with Patrick Mahomes sitting in his rookie year. Jordan Love of the Packers sat for a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. My feeling has always been get the supporting cast up to snuff so that regardless of who your quarterback is, that guy can hit the ground running. So that's why I would go receiver as opposed to, you know, J.J. McCarthy in that spot.
Here's the other factor, Patty, that plays into this that we don't know. All right, we know that Brian Daboll is the first Giants head coach since Tom Coughlin to get more than 2 years. Ben McAdoo didn't get a full second year. Pat Shurmur got 2 years. Joe Judge got 2 years. John Mara is trying to have patience. He's trying, but he's not a patient man. Mm. What we don't know is how much rope Brian Daboll has. We don't know. How much rope does Daboll have? How much rope does Joe Shane have? And quarterback, as much as I always advocate for quarterback, it's a long-term choice. It's not going to help them, as you said, it's not going to help them in 2024. And that wide receiver one helps them, you know, from week one. So I'm just curious, I guess where I'm going with this is how much pressure do you think is on Dable as we enter 2024?
I think there's some pressure, but here's the thing. If you're going to allow Dable and Shane to make a pick on a quarterback, don't make the same mistake you made with Pat Shurmur. You know, Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman picked Daniel Jones, and Pat Shurmur wasn't retained to continue seeing the development of Daniel Jones. So therefore, you know, the next coach, who was after him? I think it was Joe Judge after him. Joe Judge inherited him. Okay. And then you had, you know, maybe they felt differently about Daniel Jones. And then Brian Dable inherited him. So, you know, maybe Dable had a different perspective of him. You want the quarterback to be the choice of the head coach and the GM, ideally, so that they can develop him, they can build around him. When you start swapping out the head coach and saying, okay, you know what, Brian, you're out after this year. Now you bring in another coach, and who knows if that next coach feels the same way about the quarterback that you picked. So I think the Giants have to be patient. You know, now that doesn't mean that if the locker room falls apart or Brian Dable goes and does something absolutely stupid that he shouldn't be fired. You know, we saw that with McAdoo. McAdoo lost the locker room and, you know, just one thing added up to another. But as long as Brian Dable, you know, keeps them competitive, keeps that locker room together. Yeah, I mean, nobody's penciling in the Giants to be a Super Bowl contender in 2024. It's just probably not going to happen. But if they can show progress, and the way they're going to show progress is you keep the same system, you keep changing it out, then you have to reset every year. And that's been a problem. So hopefully John Mara understands that. I think he does. And, you know, is the pressure on Brian Dable to turn it around? Yeah. Why wouldn't there be? I mean, you name me any head coach who doesn't have pressure. Even Andy Reid has pressure in Kansas City to repeat as Super Bowl champions, you know? So it's a different type of pressure, but there's pressure nonetheless.
Absolutely. Patty, let's get back to Daniel Jones a little bit. Where are you on Daniel Jones, his future with the Giants, whether you think he'll be the quarterback beyond 2024. I think, however this shakes out, Patty, whether they draft a quarterback, whatever happens with Drew Lock, I think most of us agree Daniel Jones is going to play more snaps at quarterback for the Giants than any other quarterback in 2024. He's going to play the majority of the snaps. The question is, what happens beyond 2024? Where do you think this is headed? Do you think this is headed to a post-Jones era in 2025?
I could see that happening. And I think the biggest concern with Daniel Jones is his injury history. All right? Not the ACL. Players come back from ACLs. The neck injury is, for me, I think the biggest concern. And I think for the Giants, the biggest concern. I do think that, you know, if he is healthy, it makes sense to start Daniel Jones. I know some people out there are going to say no, no, no. But here's why it makes sense. You know, like it or not, right now, he is the best and the most senior quarterback they have on that roster as of right now. All right. You want to give yourself a chance to win with your best players. So you start things off with him. If the season goes south, then you say, okay, you know what? That injury history still concerns me. We're going to move on anyway. Now maybe you put him on the bench so that $12 million injury guarantee clause that he has due next year doesn't kick in. But I think if you're the Giants, you know, you have to keep it in the forefront of your mind that this young man is potentially one hit away from a third neck injury. And if that, God forbid, happens, I don't know that he comes back from that. So that's a big, big concern. Now, if on the flip side, if you say to yourself, okay, we can get him back to playing the way he was in 2022 when he looked, you know, like a functioning quarterback, you don't want to necessarily throw that away. I get that. But the injury history, to me, I think is going to be one of the driving forces as to what the Giants do after this year.
Absolutely. And I think, Patty, that even if the Giants don't take a quarterback at six, and I like J.J. McCarthy, I can make an argument for J.J. McCarthy. And if it's J.J. McCarthy or somebody else that happens to fall to number six, if the Giants love the guy and they, you know, then you take the guy. If they're not 100% sure, if they think they can get an equal talent, you know, down the road a year from now, then you wait. But I think it behooves the Giants, it's in their best interest to add a quarterback somewhere in the draft, whether that's a Bo Nix if he falls on day two. I mean, Mel Kiper has Bo Nix going 12 to the Denver Broncos in his mock draft that came out on Tuesday. So, I mean, if that's a Spencer Rattler or a Michael Pratt from Tulane or a Joe Milton from Tennessee, it makes sense to me anyway, to bring a rookie quarterback into the room, try to develop him and see if a year from now, if you think he's an option.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I agree. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. This is a deep quarterback class, all right? Very deep. Next year's quarterback class is said to be not as deep. Plus, you don't know where you're going to be drafted next year. Ideally, if you're the Giants, you don't want to be drafted at six again. You don't want to be drafted in the top half of the draft. So you have to strike while the iron's hot. You know, it's kind of like you go to a store and you pass by this item that you see on the shelf and it's a limited time item. And you say to yourself, okay, do I buy it now or do I come back and get it later? And if you say, oh, I'll come back and get it later, well, now you're running the risk of it not being on the shelf. So if you want it and it's there, get it.
Well, here's the argument that I've made, Patty. Everybody says, oh, you can't take QB4. With the sixth pick in the draft. Well, what if, as you had mentioned, that next year's quarterback class is not supposed to be as deep as this one? What if Joe Shane and the Giants look at this quarterback class and they think, we're going to need a quarterback in the next 2 years? What if they look at this quarterback class and think, in next year's quarterback class, J.J. McCarthy is QB1? What if they look at it that way? Then that puts a different spin on it. If they think he's quarterback one, that means they think they can't get a better guy a year from now. So I think that puts a different spin on whether you make that move or not.
And also, don't forget, if you take a quarterback in the first round, whether you take him at six or you trade back up into the first round, you're going to get that kid for 5 years. Because you're going to have the option year. Mm-hmm. So even if he sits for a year, so what? And you still have 4 more years to decide on him.
And that's so, the other, you know, I'm sorry, Patty, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No worries. I was going to say, so that's the other factor you have to take into consideration.
For me, you know, we talk about Daniel Jones. We talk about the neck injuries and the history and all that. Here's the other factor is we're entering year six with Daniel Jones. We're still arguing about what Daniel Jones is, what he is, what he isn't, what he can be, what he should have been, whose fault it is that he's not what he should have been. You know, whose fault is it that maybe the best football he ever played was, in the, you know, was the first few games he played under Pat Shurmur. We're still arguing about that in year six. At some point, you reset the quarterback room, you reset the finances, you try to build around a young quarterback, and that's another factor in the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you look at what Houston has done. You know, they've got, what, two receivers on rookie deals and their quarterback on rookie deals. Mm-hmm. And they've been able to allocate their financial resources to what's important, the trenches and so forth. So that's where I think the Giants ultimately would like to get to. But, you know, look, if Daniel Jones gets healthy and he balls out, that's a good problem to have if you think
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely. Patty, last thing for you, and this one just kind of popped into my head here. The other day at Big Blue View, Tony Del Genio and I did a piece. Albert Breer the other day for SI said, and I think we all know this, but he said the Giants are using a very Buffalo-ish approach to trying to build their roster. You know, premium positions, a lot of resources in the front seven on defense, a lot of resources on the offensive line, some of which have worked, some of which haven't worked. And Tony and I basically kind of went back and forth in a post on does the Buffalo model work? So, and I mean, for me, it does. Five straight years in the playoffs, just because they haven't won a Super Bowl doesn't mean it doesn't work. I'm just curious, if you look at that Buffalo model, the way that they built their team, the way that they allocate resources, you know, they went all out for the Josh Allen trade. Does that model work in your mind?
I think it can if you make the right decisions. You know, I mean, you know, Buffalo, as you mentioned, they've been in the playoffs, you know, more often than not. They haven't won it all. You know, and you can look at each individual reason why they didn't win it. In some cases, it was a matter of a play here or a play there. But yeah, I mean, look, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll come from Buffalo. That's what they know. You know, that was their most recent experience. And they have seen it work. So why couldn't it work here for the Giants? I mean, you know, granted, it's a little different setup. You know, the structure's a little different. But yeah, I absolutely think it can work, and they need it to work. If that's the model they're going to use, they need it to work, because the whole idea of bringing those two in was to go outside of the Giant. You know, the Giant way was not working anymore. It was outdated. It was just antiquated. It was time to refresh the way the Giants were doing things. Joe Shane has come in, and behind the scenes, he's changed a lot of things, from how they scout to how they grade players. I mean, all kinds of things he's changed. So if it yields success and if it replicates what they do up in Buffalo, why would anybody have a problem with that?
No reason to. Anyway, Patty, I think that's a good spot for us to call it a day. Before I let you go, you got anything special coming down the pipeline here?
Yeah, we're going to be doing our staff mock drafts over on Giants Country. Those are always fun. I just put up a mock draft, actually, a dream scenario mock draft on Monday as part
of Bo Nix, Patty, come on. Bo Nix at 47. Come on, Patty. I saw you.
I know.
No, I only say that. I might do the same thing, Patty, but I had to take my opportunity to pick on you a little bit. But
here I was nice and I didn't pick on you on my show.
And then off air you said, "Hey, we didn't pick on each other enough on my show."
I know. Well, you're making up for it. But yeah,
I'm trying.
So we got that. We have Coach Gene Clemens's good, great, and ugly series on the new acquisitions. We'll keep you updated on draft stuff. I'm going to do some cap stuff, some financial stuff. I got a really cool piece that I'm working on regarding the financial assets and how they've been allocated, and just a historical look at that. So yeah, all kinds of good stuff. And then over on the podcast, just rolling right along with whatever the news of the day is.
There you go. All right, Patty, thank you as always. Giants fans, thank you as always for listening. Please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.